Hi, everybody. I'm Beatty Cohn-Rados, and welcome, welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. And I have some news for you beginning next Monday, and that is January the 25th, 2021. We're going to be opening up the phone lines for you. So whether or not you are dealing with depression or anxiety or relationship issues or substance abuse issues of various different kinds, or old traumas or new traumas. And certainly in the last year, we've all had a lot of challenges that we are having to figure out ways to get through. You are going to be able to call me live. And I want you to just write down the number, okay? The live number is 888-874-4888. And you can also leave me voicemails so that if you are a little shy initially and you don't feel comfortable calling the show live, you can leave me a voicemail at 862-800-6805. Because as I've been telling you for the last 329 Ask Beatty shows, that we do not need to navigate life's challenges and life's struggles on our own. And I'm really, really hoping that you are going to take the opportunity and we are going to be able to talk honestly about what is going on and what is not going on in your life. And my mantra is that for all of us to be willing and to be serious and to be doing things that are in our best interest in terms of acknowledging, addressing, and resolving as best as we can the issues that are getting in the way of our lives and our relationships. So mark it on your calendar, and next Monday, a portion of the Ask Beatty Show is going to really be dedicated to you. So moving ahead, today we are going to be celebrating and commemorating Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. And I was reading an article in the New York Times this morning and was talking about how America really should look to the country's legacy of young leaders to help move the agenda forward. Of course, along with President-elect Biden's, hopefully, his compassionate and new policies that are really going to make a difference and are going to be committed to educational opportunities for all, to income equality versus income inequality. And of course, what we need in this country now more than ever is universal health care. You know, even many of my patients are fortunate enough to have health insurance, but when it comes to mental health benefits, for so many of the policies, it is the real, real abomination. And you figure how many people are able to pay so much money out of their pockets, not only for mental health services, but for prescription medication as well. So hopefully in the next 4 years, we are going to see a real change when it comes to the implementation of universal health care. And of course, Bernie Sanders has talked about this a lot, which is a free or affordable college tuition. You know, when I think about the tuition that I paid when I went to graduate school at McGill University, and okay, granted, it was a few years ago, but it was $450 a semester. And I was looking recently at what Canadians pay for their tuition, and it is very, very low. And we're also hoping that there is going to be more racial equality and also more equality for other marginalized groups. So such as the LGBT and the disabled. I mean, we never, ever, or rarely hear anything about the disabled and how they too, along with other marginalized groups, are really suffering, and how they suffer, whether or not they're disabled emotionally or physically or psychologically or psychiatrically. There is still a tremendous, tremendous amount of discrimination against people who are unfortunately disabled. But now is the time. And of course, these words are Martin Luther King Jr.'s words in his Now is the Time speech. And now is the time to make real the promise of democracy. And now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit paths of racial justice. And now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksand of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. And Martin Luther King, he believed that in all sincerity. And there's no question that there have been a lot of gains made over the years. But yesterday, in preparing for the show, I wanted to look at some real life statistics. So where did I go? I Googled the 2019 Bureau of Labor Statistics. And I was very, very curious what the disparity was between Blacks and all races, and you may be surprised. For example, the Blacks in America, African Americans, their annual household median income is $41,361. And you may think, well, that's really not too bad. However, if you're looking at all races, that number is $63,179, and that is quite a gap. And if you're looking at all Black workers, $769 a week is compared to $969 a week. And Black men, weekly, their weekly earning, $814 a week is compared to $1,070 for all other races. And for Black women, the weekly average wage is $735. And for all women, $806. So Black women are doing a little bit better than Black men, but certainly we have a long, long way to go before we can honestly say that the United States is a country, a true country of love and compassion and equality for all. And then I was looking at the incarceration 2019 statistics, and you may not be surprised to hear this, but six times as many African-American men are in prison as compared to whites. So we still have a long, long way to go. But what we can see now is that younger Americans are really getting into the political act. And there are more forums and more social media commentaries talking about disenfranchised groups, LGBTQ, African Americans, and other minorities. So I think, like Martin Luther King Jr., we have to be optimistic. And I guess the real question for all of us is this: do we care enough? Do we really care enough to become involved in some capacity? I mean, we can all look and we can say, isn't this a terrible thing? But each of us, in some small way, we can actually find ways, whether it is politically, whether or not it is being a big brother or a big sister. And a friend of ours recently was donating food to different communities here in New York City, where food was a real shortage for many, many, many families who have been severely, severely impacted by the pandemic. And of course, the pandemic is hardly over, and you have to continue to look at the impact of the pandemic on jobs, on health, on social relationships, and of course, you know, mental health in people. And I hear this all the time, are still very concerned about being able to pay the rent and buy food and just get basic things that we typically have not had to worry about. And of course, there's still the real concern about actually getting the COVID. In fact, somebody yesterday asked me, did I know anybody? Well, I have to tell you, months and months ago, I didn't know anybody who had contracted COVID. And in the last couple of months, things have changed. A couple of my friends in Florida, in fact, one of my closest friends, this is her second bout in the last 6 months with the virus. So we need to be really concerned about all of this. And I know that there are a lot of different opinions about the vaccine, whether you should get the vaccine, whether you shouldn't get the vaccine. And what I'm hoping is that we are all going to be listening very, very carefully to the scientists, and that they will help to guide us about the vaccines and about other health issues, and that it is not going to be people who are just conspirator thinkers and people who out of perhaps just fear or a lack of knowledge are trying to make us second guess what scientists are telling us. And I know that there are a lot of opinions about this. In fact, frankly, my husband and I, we are still taking a wait and see attitude about the vaccine. And I know that patients of mine here in New York City who are committed to actually getting the connecting with anyone, leave alone being able to actually get an appointment. So we need to be savvy. We need to be smart. We need to do what is in our best interest. And we need to listen to the real experts. And of course, you know, I continue to look at the mental health statistics, and 30%, and those numbers are going up every single week of Americans are suffering from clinical depression, 40%. And I know that number on a weekly basis are dealing and are really having a lot of trouble trying to deal with a variety of different disorders. And of course, we're really concerned that there are going to be long-term effects of post-traumatic stress disorder. People who, you know, have been living with COVID, people who know people who've been living with COVID, people who have lost their jobs, people who have lost their businesses. So it is a very, very, very overwhelming time. And we keep hoping it's just the end of January. But we keep hoping that in the next few months that there is going to be a turnaround. But of course, there are things, and this is something that I want to remind all of us about every single week here on the Ask Beatty Show, that there are many things, and it's true, that we absolutely have no control over at all. But on the other hand, there are many things that we do have control over. And of course, we need to recognize the difference between the things that we don't and the things that we do. And a phrase that Gary Null actually coined a couple of years ago is intentional ignorance. When you're doing things intentionally that are not in your best interest, and intentional neglect. So I want to just go over yet again, and I know that people who are listening to the Ask Beatty Show every week, you have been hearing me say this week in and week out for 329 shows, but I think it is worthwhile again mentioning the things that we need to do, the things that we actually can do every single day to improve our health, our physical health, and to improve our mental health as well. And of course, plant-based diets, making sure that we interact and socialize, that we're certainly getting enough sleep, 8 hours a night, that we are exercising, that we are incorporating weight training. And for those of you who like yoga or meditation or massage, into our life, because these things are wonderful, wonderful de-stressors. They are great antidepressants and great anti-anxieties. And of course, the importance of having really supportive people in your life and looking on a very, very regular basis of who actually is in your life. And making sure that not only do we eliminate chemical toxins from our lives and from our diets, but that we also eliminate. And that means giving ourselves permission to eliminate toxic people from our lives as well. And that sometimes it means friends and family. And if you're feeling really anxious, I found that positive visualization is something that is so, so helpful for me. And of course, the dancing and the listening to music. I think it's really hard to be depressed if you're listening to uplifting music and if you are moving around and dancing, and all of these things can really make all the difference in the world. So again, it's about making sure that we are aware every single day, that we monitor ourselves and make sure that we are doing things, that we are navigating our lives, that we are navigating our relationships in ways that are really in our best interest. And of course, if we're looking at food, we need to make sure that we are eliminating sugar and soda and alcohol, nicotine, and all toxins, including toxic people. And I'm looking at a list of to-dos, things that we should do every single day, that I actually wrote a couple of years ago. And one of the things is minimizing social media. Well, I think that social media has really been a savior for people. So many people are still working from home. There are so many single people and divorced and widowed people who are living by themselves. And it's been the Zoom and it's been the social media that has really kept a lot of people going. So look at how have things changed in the last couple of years. I know that I haven't seen anybody. I haven't seen a live patient. It's going to be 1 year in March. I haven't seen any friends. And yet it's something that is so nice to be able to look forward to every single week, to be able to connect, with colleagues, and to be able to connect with my friends on Zoom. So you see, things have changed and I have changed my feelings about people spending a lot of time on social media, because it has really turned out to be a lifesaver for all of us. Well, in the spirit of celebrating Martin Luther King's birthday, there is a melody that our rabbi and cantor that they sing every single Friday night at the Shabbat services at the Jewish Center of East Hampton. And the melody is, let be love. And I think that it's a melody that we should listen to right now. And even though you may not know Hebrew, we can hum along, and hopefully this music will put you into a loving and a spiritual and a really happy mood. So let there be love in our own personal lives and in our lives as citizens, to really help love to become much more a part of our daily life. And you know, when you look at all the hate and the misunderstandings amongst people, I think that people are so afraid. They're so afraid of differences. They're so afraid to debate. And yet I think that the answer, at least a very important answer that can help, or that could help solve a lot of these issues and hatred that so many people grow up with, is if we could educate, our children in our schools at a very, very young age, and have them connect with different people from different races who speak different languages from different countries, we would start to look at each other, and I believe in a very, very different way. Because I think that fear, is an underlying reason why we have always feared the stranger. And I think that if we could become a lot less strange, and if we could become a lot less as strangers, it would really help to heal society. And I think that that's something, you know, I keep hoping that our educational institutions, schools, not just teach the science and the math and the social studies, but that human relations should be something that should be a focus of our educational system. So it wouldn't matter whether or not we were of different races or different religions, that we would have an opportunity to dialogue with one another, to hear one another, to debate one another. And that is the way people would be able to learn to get along much better. So maybe President Biden, or elect President Biden, will be able to have some impact on this as well. Well, there was a piece moving from love and Martin Luther King's birthday. There was a very interesting article in the style section of the New York Times yesterday, and the headline was, "The Psychics Will See You, Bridging the Counseling Gap." So I really needed to read what this article was all about. So what's happened, apparently, in recent years, technology, of course, has opened up new possibilities for counseling. Of course, everybody these days, well, not everybody, is a coach, is a counselor, is a therapist. And it can be very, very confusing for the consumer who may be dealing with a lot of personal issues. So in addition to traditional talk therapy, I think we know that a lot of people have used psychics in the past. That apps that feature consultations with professionals and self-guided through exercises apparently have reached a wide, wide population. And the evolving view that mental health is simply health has reduced some of the stigma around seeking help, which of course is a really good thing. We want people, we want to encourage people who are having problems and issues with depression and anxiety and substance abuse and traumas of various different kinds to be aware that getting help can be maybe one of the best things that they could ever possibly do for themselves. And of course, the pandemic has only caused the demand for such services to rise, which is a good thing. There's been a problem, so people are realizing that they need to reach out more and more to experts. Of course, experts is the key to help them resolve their issues. But this article states that instead of out mental health professionals, more and more sufferers have looked to psychics. And, you know, we in the mental health profession are worried that people are using these sessions to make important life decisions, because people ask, as you know, specific questions sometimes, and this gets really serious when people are asking for medical advice from people who are not equipped to give medical advice. So the thing is that in equating and psychics, it places a global mental health crisis in the hands of people with no training. And while many kinds of counselors, religious, spiritual, and mystical among them, may be able to help with temporary bouts of anxiety and depression, let me say that again, with temporary bouts of anxiety and depression, only healthcare professionals who have adequate qualifications to treat chronic conditions and more dangerous disorders like serious clinical depression and schizophrenia are the people who we should be contacting. And of course, there are some people are experiencing distress, and they really need to give themselves permission to reach out to professionals. So whether or not it's going to a psychologist or some other kind of mental health professional, social worker, counselors, primary care providers, or psychiatrists, somebody, again, and I want to underscore this, who has the training in mental health concerns and understands what those are and has expertise in how to best treat and address those problems. I think that all of us probably at some point, whether it was for fun, have reached out to a psychic, but psychics are not the people who you should be contacting if you are suffering from a variety of mental health issues. And in the same section of the style section of the New York Times, there was another article, and this was therapists reach out with TikTok videos. And I have a confession to make. I have still not checked out the TikTok videos. But I was just amazed to read that there is a therapist, a woman who calls herself a therapist, who has 1.4 million TikTok followers. I mean, that is absolutely amazing. And she advertises in this way: do you have anxiety, addiction, childhood trauma, borderline depression, mood swings? I mean, some of this is pretty, pretty serious. And apparently her clip, her video, has been viewed by nearly 400,000 different people. So this is apparently, this is welcome to therapy TikTok, where a steady stream of mental health professionals, and I have to tell you, I have not checked it out, and I guess I'm curious, so I'm going to after the show. So you have a variety of mental health professionals who are trying to meet an anxious generation of young people where they are on social media. And these therapists, in quotes, they hit rocky rock while listing signs of unhealthy boundaries, demonstrate an anxiety relief technique to a trending rap, wiggle their hips while explaining symptoms of they dance their way through their posts, propel a tutorial algorithm that guides the videos apps. And I'm quoting this, 100 million monthly active U.S. Users. So apparently limited to 60 seconds, these videos strain to offer context or elaborate, instead offering easy, easy, digestible answers to big questions. Well, there are no easy, digestible answers to big questions, such as, what is intergenerational trauma and what are healthy ways to express rage? So, you know, when I was reading this, and I'm very, very protective. I'm very protective of the consumer because we have to be so careful, not only when we are assessing a potential love partner, but we have to be so, so careful because the advertising and the hype in this country, whether or not it's for drugs, whether or not it's for beauty products, I mean, it is really, really over the top. And we as consumers, we really cannot be too careful. So I wrote an article that I want to share with you, and that is how to find a therapist. Is your therapist helping or harming? And the reality is, and I think that this is a good thing, that more and more people today are seeing therapists for a variety of emotional, psychological, and psychiatric problems. But the real question is how can the average consumer know how to choose a therapist and whether or not this therapeutic process is the right one from them. And this can literally, it can literally be one of the most important decisions an individual or a couple could make in their life. And it has the potential for far-reaching consequences, both positive and negative. And of course, I've been saying this for years, that all therapists are not the same. So what should you do? What can you do if you have problems that really do require outside help? And for starters, you need to be consumer savvy and remember to do your homework. And here are some guidelines. Here are some suggestions to help you find a therapist that is right for you and to know if you are being helped or, on the other hand, whether or not you are being hurt in the therapeutic process. So the first thing, and I think the best thing, is not to go to TikTok and not to go to a psychic, but to get a referral from someone that you trust. And please, please do not be taken in by the splashy ads or the likes. Whether it's a doctor, whether it's a friend, whether or not it is somebody who you trust, who you can ask, you know, what has your experience and been like with this person? So please get a referral. You don't need to make this decision on your own. Number two, you want to make sure that the therapist that you choose actually specializes in your particular problem or problems, because it is not possible to be an expert in everything, so that you have to be very assertive. And sometimes it's hard, especially if you're feeling anxious, especially if you're feeling depressed, to be able to ask those questions. Do you specialize? How many years have you been practicing? And how many people have you actually treated who have my particular problem? Number three, and this is something that is also very important, and I would vouch to say that virtually nobody does this. You want to check, we can do this online, you want to check his or her license and make sure that there are no past or pending malpractice complaints that are filed against your therapy. So yes, you're going to have to do some work. You're going to have to do some homework before you hopefully make a decision that you are going to book an appointment with a particular therapist. Number four, assume that you've decided that this is somebody who you would like to have an initial consultation. Now, remember that an initial consultation does not mean you are stuck to continue seeing somebody where you don't feel the connection. So that you want to expect that your therapist is going to ask you, and I do, a lot of tough questions about your family background, your relationship history, sex, previous psychiatric problems, including possible hospitalizations, suicide attempts and gestures, medications that you are taking, both prescription and over-the-counter medications, possible addictions, traumas, sexual abuse, sexual assault, affairs, and gender identity issues. This is a lot to swallow, I know that, but though many of these questions may be difficult for you to answer, it is vital for us as therapists to know these facts, to ask the questions, so that we are going to be able to make an accurate diagnosis and really be able to figure out how we can best help you. And this is only possible if the right questions are asked and that your answers are honest. And I know that some of these questions you're going to find very difficult to answer and you may be embarrassed to answer, but it is vital. It is vital that the questions be asked and that your answers are honest. And you want to make sure that your potential therapist is on board with this process. I know that there are a lot of therapists who just want to begin at the beginning and they say that the history, well, what happened, happened. And let's start with today and see what you can do today to move forward. And in the almost 40 years that I have been practicing as a psychotherapist, I can tell you definitively that knowing about family history and helping people to emotionally work through what did and did not happen beginning in their family of origin is vital. It is vital if the process is really going to work for you. And then you have to ask yourself after the first few sessions whether you are comfortable with your therapist, because you know what? All therapists are not going to be for you. For example, with me, if somebody is expecting me to just sit there and not give opinions and not be interactional, I am definitely going to be the wrong therapist for that person. But on the other hand, I don't want you to expect initially a strong level of comfort, because like any relationship, it's going to take some time for trust to develop. And if you continue to feel uncomfortable, though, after several sessions, you need to give yourself permission to exit and to be able to say, look, I don't think that things are really working for me. And I know you will definitely then be able to go and find a therapist with whom you will be able to connect and with whom you will be able to feel comfortable. And there should never, ever, ever, and I mean, this is just a given, be any inappropriate advances, sexual, verbal, or otherwise, that occurs between you and your therapist. And if you're starting to feel, and we all know that feeling of discomfort, you should promptly leave and shut the door. And if somebody has actually come on to you, again, you can, after you leave, file a complaint, a medical malpractice complaint against the therapist. Number six, and this is also something that is so important and it's so frustrating for so many people. You know what it's like? You call a doctor or you call a lawyer and you're hoping there is a crisis. You are in crisis and you are hoping that somebody is going to call you back. And they don't. And you wait one day and you wait 2 days. And a patient of mine who was trying to reach the psychiatrist waited 2 weeks. So what you want, what we all want, is someone who is going to respect your time and call you back within 24 hours, including evenings and weekends, if necessary. There is no excuse. It is a sign of disrespect. It is a sign of non-caring, and you do not want to be in a situation, certainly ever, with a therapist. You don't want to be in a situation like that with anybody who does not respect you and does not respect your time, but you certainly don't want to be in a situation with a therapist who is not available and who does not respect you and your time and the crisis that you are in. And the fact that the, you know, health insurance companies often poorly reimburse the therapists for outpatient mental health should not be your concern, because you are entitled to sessions lasting a minimum of 50 minutes. All of my sessions last 60 minutes. When I was growing up in Canada, I learned that 1 hour was 60 minutes. It was not 50 minutes. It was not 45 minutes. But these days, it seems as if many, many therapists, their sessions last 45 minutes or 50 minutes, which I strongly object to, because you figure you arrive and you say hello and you say, you know, how is the week? And then at the end of the session, you're taking healthcare insurance information, so you're wasting a lot of time. And I really do find that sessions, in fact, longer sessions work even better, and that it is not unusual in my practice that patients will have sessions lasting sometimes 2 to 4 to 5 hours. I've had sessions with couples, people who have come to New York City from out of town, and the longer sessions, they really, really do help to achieve results faster. And of course, they're able to really fast forward the process. And you also want to make sure that your therapist is doing his or her due diligence on this basic level. And if they are not, it is an indication that your therapist is not fully involved with you. You are paying money. You have issues. You want a therapist who is really there for you and who is truly involved with you and committed to helping you resolve issues. Number 7. Now, this is something that I do, and I know that a lot of therapists don't, but I think it's very important. And that is, your therapist, I feel, should be in contact at least once, at least initially, with your primary care doctor. And this is really necessary in order to rule out any physical problems or prescription medications that actually may be contributing or causing your patient's problems. Because after a few sessions, your therapist should be able to tell you your diagnosis, what they think is really going on, including a detailed treatment plan. This is what we are going to be doing. For example, it sounds like you have a lot of old issues with your parents stemming from your family of origin. And I think it's really important that we look at all of this. I know it happened many, many years ago, so that you as a patient know exactly what the therapy roadmap is going to look like. And the other thing is that I believe, and after all these years, I think I've really figured out what works and what doesn't work, is that anything less than weekly sessions, at least in the beginning, will not enable you to have the best possible momentum to achieve success in your therapy. And people say, I don't have the money. So if money is a problem, And I know that this is something that is difficult for all of us to do, but I encourage you, and I certainly do this with my patients, try to negotiate your fee with your therapist or even suggest a payment plan, because you know what this is really about. This is a way for you to learn, maybe finally, maybe for the first time in your life, to ask for what you want. Because remember, your therapist, we are not all-knowing God or goddesses. So you need to be assertive. And I would say that maybe 60% of my patients, we have talked about a reduction in fee. And I'm one of these people who's been very, very happy to adjust the fee. And I'll tell you something really cute talking about fees. This reminds me, many, many years ago, I was a school social worker in Montreal, in the elementary schools and junior high and high schools in Greater Montreal. So I was employed, I was paid by the Montreal school board. But I had this idea that some way it would be really more effective and that people would be more committed and more motivated to work with me if they gave me something. And I'll never forget this with the elementary school children. I told them right at the beginning that if they were going to be seeing me, and of course these children, they saw me on a weekly basis. I was in the schools on a regular basis, that my fee was going to be a blue bubble gum. And it was absolutely amazing. It was more than the blue bubble gum, because I actually loved blue bubble gum, even though these days I don't think I've had any bubble gum probably in 25 years. The pride that these little children felt when they were coming to my office in the schoolroom and that they were handing me a blue bubblegum. I don't know who got more out of the gift, whether or not it was their giving me the gum or whether or not I was receiving it. So I think that fees are really important. I think that people should pay fees, whether it is a blue bubblegum for maybe some young children. But again, give yourself permission and feel free, if you're feeling that money is an issue, to try to negotiate a fee with your therapist. And I think I might go out on a limb, but people who know me know that I go out on a limb all the time. And I think that if someone, particularly in these difficult times, is not willing to adjust the fee somewhat, you really have to wonder whether this is the kind of a person that you would want to work with. Even a 10% reduction, it may not even be about the money, but what that would show me as a patient is that this person cared, that it was not just about money, and that together we were trying to work out a win-win situation, which is what it is always about, right? Trying to work out win-win situations. Moving forward, hopefully your therapist is going to ask whether or not your spouse or parent or siblings or children are going to need to participate in your therapy, because clearly, if you're having relationship difficulties or family difficulties, at some point, these people are going to need to participate. It may be that your therapist does not do couples counseling, or your therapist does not do family therapy and only does individual therapy. So hopefully this person would then refer you to a therapist who would be able to complete your treatment, and somebody who does specialize in family and or couples counseling. And in my opinion, your therapist, and I've said this before, should fully understand your family background and help you see how the past has affected your present situation and problems. It always, always does. Because unless that occurs, your treatment is going to be, in my opinion, bandage therapy at best, or a complete waste of time at worst. The old issues, the unfinished business, the skeletons in your closet that always, always get in the way of today need to be acknowledged and addressed and resolved as best as they possibly can be. And remember, too, that successful therapy depends not only on your therapist's expertise, but on how much time, work, and energy you are prepared to put into the therapeutic process. We cannot do it alone, and a good therapist should make that clear to the patient. Medication. Yes, medication is overprescribed in this country. And the question of medication, of course, often comes up. And although no one likes to go on medication, there are certain clinical situations that absolutely require a combination of medication and psychotherapy. So that if you have to, of course, you want to see a psychiatrist, somebody who's going to be able to spend the time with you, where you would start on the lowest possible therapeutic dose. And sometimes diet and exercise and positive visualization and eating well is not going to do the trick. And if you're finding that you've tried and that your depression is still so severe, that your suicidal thoughts are getting worse, that your mood swings are out of control, please give yourself permission and don't beat yourself up if you're finding that you are needing to go on medication. Because brain chemistry, it is very complex. So let the experts do their job. And I want to remind you to spend at least as much time and hopefully a lot more researching your therapist as you would do on deciding which car or computer or cell phone to buy. So making the time and effort to be a wise consumer is going to save you precious time, money, and energy. So I'm going to wish you the best luck on your therapeutic journey. And remember, my friends, that beginning next week, you are going to be able to call me. You're going to be able to call me live on the show, and you're going to be able to leave me voicemails so that here on the Ask Beattie Show, I will be looking forward to helping you acknowledge, address, and resolve, at least initially, the issues that are getting in the way of your life and your relationship. I can't believe this. I had so many more things that I wanted to talk with you about today, but our time is actually almost up. So I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. Is to do everything that you can possibly do to monitor yourself, to make sure that you are living your days and your nights in ways that are really in best interest. And that means loving yourself. And of course, today, yes, today is Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, but even if it is tomorrow or next month or next year, what we all need to do is find much, much better ways to learn to love each other. And I leave you with my favorite song, and that is, "What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love." Goodbye, everybody. Talk with you next week. Have a good rest of the day. We have a new president in a couple of days, and this will be the dawning of a new and better era. Take care, everybody.